Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about Northwestern Energy, bison, and the final installment of the next Yellowstone series. It's Friday, December 27th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. A land use group opposing construction of a proposed cheese processing facility east of Great Falls announced yesterday it's suing Cascade County commissioners. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
Montanans for Responsible Land Use says the Cascade County Commission improperly removed several restrictions that the local Zoning Board of Adjustment placed on the Big Sky Cheese Plant's special use permit issued in August. According to the Great Falls Tribune, those conditions included, but were not limited to, water quality and quantity issues, as well as hours of operation. The Trib reports Big Sky Cheese appealed 9 of the Board of Adjustment's 17 conditions. County commissioners reversed 4 conditions and modified a handful of others. Montanans for Responsible Land Use, a nonprofit made up of about 180 Cascade County landowners and residents, contend the zoning board's restrictions were legally binding. The group, which declined Montana Public Radio's interview request Thursday, also said the county commission improperly excluded public comment prior to its decision to reverse and modify some of the zoning board's conditions. The suit was filed Tuesday in Cascade County District Court. The cheese processing facility is part of a larger agricultural project proposed about 8 miles east of Great Falls. Proponents say it will spur local economic growth and development. Some, however, fear the projects could introduce more corporate agricultural development to the area. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
State parks across Montana will offer guided hikes on New Year's Day. The Bozeman Daily Chronicle reports the first day hikes are an annual tradition across the U.S. and that some 55,000 people walked more than 133,000 miles in state parks nationwide on New Year's Day last year. This year, Missouri Headwaters State Park will offer a 3-mile family-friendly loop at 11 a.m. The Lewis and Clark Expedition camped at the site in 1805 on their way to the Pacific Ocean, and the land had been used for thousands of years by multiple Native American tribes. Montana's largest electric utility is asking state regulators to approve a 24-cent increase to its customers' monthly home electric bills to recover a portion of the amount the company pays in annual property taxes. Kayla DeRoche reports.
Northwestern Energy is also asking the Montana Public Service Commission to lower natural gas customers' monthly bills by $1.46. Northwestern Energy spokesperson Jody Black says the annual adjustment recovers state and local taxes for some Northwestern properties like dams or other infrastructure associated with transmission and distribution.
In Montana, we have a class of taxpayers that are centrally assessed, and that is for things such as pipelines or other assets that go through multiple counties and cross multiple lines.
The adjustment also includes Northwestern's invasive species fee, a new assessment on hydropower facilities passed by the legislature this year to fund the state's prevention and monitoring program. Northwestern says its customers collectively will pay more than $900,000 annually in invasive species fees. The Public Service Commission, which regulates utilities in the state, will review the filing, which goes into effect January 1st, 2020. The tax recovery filing is separate from Northwestern's rate case, which the PSC approved late last week. That order allows the company to increase overall rates by $6.5 million. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
A federal appeals court this week revived a lawsuit filed by an environmental law firm that challenges the state of Montana and the federal government's management of bison from Yellowstone National Park. Rachel Kramer reports.
Monday's 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruling reversed the decision by a lower court in February, which had dismissed the lawsuit from the Cottonwood Environmental Law Center, a nonprofit law firm and conservation organization based in Bozeman. A 3-judge panel said by allowing hunting and hazing of bison, the federal government had taken actions that were a valid target of the lawsuit. The panel returned the case to U.S. District Judge Sam Haddon for further proceedings and to decide if Cottonwood's lawyers have valid claims against the state of Montana. Cottonwood's executive director, John Meyer, says the news was cause for a celebration.
Ultimately, our goal here is to get more bison all across the state of Montana on public land, and that will ensure there's a safe hunt, and it will also bring in more tourism dollars for the state of Montana.
The lawsuit filed in 2018 alleges the Secretary of the Interior, along with the National Park Service, Forest Service, and the state of Montana, manage bison in a way that is outdated and endangers the public. Bison migrate out of the park each winter in search of food at lower elevations. Meyer says the current hunting zones concentrates hunters, which means there's a greater chance of someone getting hurt. He says it's also not fair to the bison.
You can see 30, 40 native and non-native hunters lining up on the park boundary. And as soon as a bison walks out of the park, these guys start blasting. It's not fair chase ethics. It's just not right.
Meyer says some of the changes Cottonwood is seeking include lifting designated boundaries, which would allow bison and hunters to spread out. Another change would be raising the population goal from 3,000 to 7,500 bison in Yellowstone. Meyer says this would eliminate the need to capture and slaughter bison that leave the park and are not hunted. One of the reasons the Interagency Bison Management Team controls where bison are allowed to move and tries to keep the population in check is due to concern that bison could spread brucellosis, a bacterial disease, to cattle. There has not been a confirmed case of this happening, while there have been confirmed cases of elk transmitting the disease. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
We're now going to share another kind of story from voices you might not hear otherwise. I Sat Down With is a series from the University of Montana Journalism School and is reported, written, and produced by students. Student Mia McKinney sat down with Midge Jarrett, who at 94 years old regularly drove from Missoula to Seeley Lake to visit her sister Jan at Jan's memory care home. McKinney brings us Midge's story of sisterly love and responsibility, connection, and loss.
I'm Mia McKinney, and I spoke with Midge Jarrett, a 94-year-old woman raised in a ranch in eastern Montana. She told me about the special bond between her and her little sister, Jan. Jan was diagnosed with advanced dementia and had moved to a memory care home 2 hours away from Midge. Despite the distance, Midge often made the drive to visit her sister.
Our family was our recreation, our friends, our mentors, everything. And I can remember when I was 4, she was 2 years younger than I, my mother giving me her hand, the little girl's hand, and said, "This is your little sister. Would you take care of her?" So I have felt duty-bound all my life to take care of Jan because she is still my little sister. I can't do much because she's ill, but I can go and see her. My daughter won't allow me to drive that far very often, so.
But you do make the drive.
Yes, I do.
A few days after my first conversation with Midge, Jan passed away. I checked back in with Midge and we talked some more about the sister she so recently lost.
Well, I envied her because she had blonde hair and she could get a suntan. I had red hair and I burned to a crisp if I even looked at the sun. She had that gorgeous skin that would turn brown. Her hair was always blonde and pretty and thick. So I envied her how she looked. And she could ride horses just so well. She was perfect on a horse. We would jump off of the bridge into the water in a flooding time, and it was so full of mud, you didn't have to swim. You could just float on the top of it, so then grab a tree branch and get out. My mother, knowing that, she'd have died. And my little daughter was named after my sister, Jan.
Why did you choose to do that?
I just liked my sister and wanted my daughter to be that name. My husband wanted her to be named for his mother. Her name was Dora. I thought, there's no way I'm going to name my daughter Dora. She was always there when I needed somebody to talk to or when I wanted to go see somebody. If she was near enough, I could always go see Jan. And she was sympathetic and kind and had a lot of empathy for me. But she didn't like where she was. She didn't want to She couldn't remember anything, so she wanted to go be with her mom and dad. Hopefully that's where she is.
I think she is too.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Midge Jarrett, A Loving Sister. In Missoula, I'm Mia McKinney.
That was University of Montana student Mia McKinney for the University of Montana Journalism School's I Sat Down With series. Almost two centuries ago, the U.S. government and white hunters began slaughtering bison on the Great Plains. They pushed the animals close to extinction. But now a wealthy nonprofit is trying to bring them back to the prairies by stitching together a massive, privately funded national park in northeastern Montana. Many local ranchers loathe the idea, but local tribal councils say the return of bison is a long time coming. With support from the Pulitzer Center, Nate Hedgie from the Mountain West News Bureau reports in the last of this five-part series about building the next Yellowstone.
The Fort Belknap Indian Reservation is sheltered in the shadow of the Little Rocky Mountains. In the winter there, the air gets so cold it hurts the back of your throat when you breathe. Everything is frozen, seems dead. But in late July, the grasses grow green and tall, and folks are all gathered together near the town of Lodgepole for a powwow. When I arrive, a thunderstorm is building in the distance, and the air is thick with humidity. Kids and families are everywhere. Generators hum from the backs of trailers. I grab a greasy hamburger from a food stand and strike up a conversation with its cook, Hannah Hazeagle. She's Nakota and says she'd much rather be serving hamburgers made from bison rather than beef.
We can fill up cans and cans of fat, but with that buffalo, you don't even get a quarter in the can of fat.
It's lean meat.
Yeah, it's straight lean, yeah.
She says it's a healthier food for people on a reservation to eat. And that's a big reason why she's excited about American Prairie Reserve. The proposed 3.2 million acre, privately funded wildlife sanctuary is planning to reintroduce thousands of genetically pure bison back to the Great Plains.
It's probably a blessing to have all those buffalo. It ain't probably, it is.
That's because for centuries, the lives of Plains tribes and bison were braided together. The people relied on the animals for everything. So when the U.S. government and white settlers began their mass slaughter of the bison in the 19th century, it was like they were tearing out the tribe's heart. Kenneth Tuffy Helgeson is Nakota. He sums it up best with stories his grandfather told him.
The buffalo to the Indian is a symbol of God. And when they tried to eradicate the Indian, they knew if they took away our main food source, our main symbol of God, that we would be rendered to literally nothing.
Helgeson is a fourth generation rancher here on the reservation. He's wearing a crisp white shirt, flat brim hat, and blue jeans. He says the stories of bison and tribes mirrored each other after that slaughter. Wild bison were confined within a single national park, Yellowstone.
At the same time, Indians were put on a reservation in their own kraals, and our populations dwindled.
Helgeson's family and many others were encouraged to cultivate the land, like white people do.
And we were given a plow and a horse and a bit and a bridle and a few head of cows to make a life for ourselves to the word they used in those days was to assimilate the Indian, to take away their culture, to give them a new culture.
The culture of ranching. And that culture has held power over the West for more than 150 years. Helgeson feels for the local ranching community, with American Prairie Reserve purchasing many of their spreads. Cattlemen are losing their neighbors and their way of life. But Helgeson also understands why some folks on the reservation don't have a lot of sympathy for them.
So in a lot of ways, a person may think, you're going to get your comeuppance and we're going to settle up and you're going to feel what we felt.
Now, not everyone feels that way. There are a lot of different opinions about American Prairie Reserve on the reservation. But Helgeson says times are changing and the world is evolving. And right now, it's evolving in the tribe's favor. They're gaining a crucial piece of their culture back. American Prairie's wild herd will be the largest one in the lower 48. But the coin hasn't completely flipped. Tribes are able to hunt bison on reserve lands, but they currently have to pay a fee to do it. You see, American Prairie isn't giving tribes their traditional lands back. It plans to keep them so it can have a louder voice in how this patchwork of public and private lands is managed.
That is traditional land for the Nakota, the Ani, the Blackfeet. Do you think that they should hand that land back over to the tribes? Is that the right thing to do?
You know, I believe, my friend, that in our old songs, our old teachings. There's one song that our people sing, and it says, "My friend, don't be foolish. The only thing that lives forever is the earth." We can fight over land, we can fight over dirt, we can fight over all these things, but really all you ever have is what's on your shoes. That's the only dirt that you'll ever own. The only ground that you'll ever own is on your shoes, and that'll fall off too.
For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Nate Hedgie.
This story comes to us from the Mountain West News Bureau, a consortium of NPR member stations in the region. You can listen to all five parts of the next Yellowstone series on our website, ypradio.org. And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds Monday morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.